Failure is not an option.
What difference at this point does it make?
Nobody said it was going to be fun.
This is Real Talk, a fearless, poignant, and intrepid show where truth speaks louder than words. This is Real Talk with your host, Audrey Russo.
The shame, not of this world, so we live on the run. We keep our eyes set, on what is to come.
It happened before. It will happen again. It's just a question of when.
Time's a luxury we don't have.
Hi, this is Marion Ross. So lovely talking to my friend Audrey Russo. And I want you all to go and buy my new book, My Days Happy and Otherwise, and read the good and the bad about it. And it's been so much fun talking to Audrey Russo.
Welcome back. If you're just joining us, this is Audrey Russo, and you're listening to Real Talk. PBS aired a two-hour documentary about Senator Joseph McCarthy on Netflix. Was it accurate or just another pile of lies and disinformation about the senator and his critical work for our country? And Qasem Soleimani, the monster jihadist leader with the blood of over 1,000 U.S. servicemen on his hands, is dead. Was President Trump right to eliminate this threat to all free people? Well, we're going to find out answers with my next guest. For my new listeners, Diana West is the author of several best-selling books, including Death of the Grown-Up, How America's Arrested Development is Bringing Down Western Civilization, and American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. And she's the author of the new bestseller, The Red Thread, A Search for Ideological Drivers Inside the Anti-Trump Conspiracy. She's a former nationally syndicated conservative American columnist whose blog is one of Newsmax's 50 best conservative blogs and tackles controversial subjects such as the impact of Islam and the failures of counterinsurgency. Diana has contributed essays and features to numerous periodicals, including The Wall Street Journal, The Weekly Standard, and The Washington Post. She has also been a columnist for The Washington Times, Scripps Howard News Service, and United Media. And she can be read at The Daily Caller. Diana is also a popular analyst and contributor on both radio and TV. It's my great pleasure to give a Real Talk welcome back to Diana West.
Yay!
Gee, these people won't sit down.
I know. Let them go. That's great. Good way to start 2020.
Right? Absolutely. It's so great to have you with us again.
Wonderful to be with you, Audrey.
Well, you know, we're going to jump into this. I know we've hit this before, but we have to keep hitting it because I want the listeners I want us all to get it, and I want them to be able to share it with their friends and family that just may not have it right when it comes to Senator Joseph McCarthy. As I mentioned in the intro, PBS aired a two-hour documentary about Senator Joseph McCarthy on Netflix. Did they, again, get the senator wrong? And if yes, why?
Yes, 1,000 times yes, they get it wrong. And the question why is what is really interesting here. And another thing, yes, we keep having to hit this subject, the just utter just desecration of this political afterlife of Senator McCarthy, who of course has been dead over 60 years. And we have these periodic assaults on him after death that are just positively ghoulish. And it's because they keep attacking him, we have to keep talking about him. But yes, the question of why they do this is so important, because it is my belief that the extent to which we get Senator McCarthy and his efforts to expose and remove communists and pro-communists from inside the federal government is the extent to which we are continuing to fall to communists and pro-communists in our culture. I mean, this is sort of the sort of put-ons that Americans believe that we won the ideological Cold War. We did not. And these periodic reminders by now public television or media or books or, you know, just generally in the atmosphere that McCarthy was this devil dog of our history keeps us from really appreciating how we've been taken down from within. And so that's kind of my general feeling about why we're looking at this and why it's important to really get it right and fight against this disinformation.
Yeah. You know, I understand why the communist left gets McCarthy wrong. That's intentional. But
yeah,
why do conservatives keep getting the facts wrong and still disseminating the lies?
Well, that is an excellent question, too, and a very natural one. And I wonder the same thing myself. It has a lot to do with the perfect vacuum that the left was able to create over these 60, 70 years, really, since McCarthy even came on the stage in 1950, whereby it is dangerous politically or professionally to support his work. It is something that will get you knocked off party lists. I mean cocktail party lists, not communist party lists. I mean, it is something that deeply affects an academic career, a journalistic career. And again, this speaks to this absolute takeover of our media and political organs, organizations, sites, etc., by the left, by the mindset of the left. And I think that this is where conservatives function. Conservatives function inside this larger kind of atmospheric created by the left, where if you say anything really about any sort of threat to the Constitution, you are going to get slammed and hammered as exhibiting McCarthyism, whether it even has any relevance to the subject or not. Anything that the left doesn't like becomes labeled McCarthyism, and I think that the right has become kind of the battered spouse of the left in this sense, in terms of repeating it and adopting the sort of modus operandi of the tormentor and really submitting to it. So again, this speaks to something that I came to maybe a decade ago, that we did not win the Cold War, ideologically speaking, which is really the whole ball of wax. And this is part of it. And so when you see these constant efforts to remind us how terrible McCarthy was that are based on really completely debunkable lies, you understand the importance to the left of maintaining this kind of hegemony over our minds. Mm-hmm. And it just kind of permeates the atmosphere. And I think this is the same atmosphere, again, that conservatives really live with. And I think that you have to go back a long time to even understand when this started happening. And certainly in terms of publishing and newspapers, back in the day, you go back to the 1930s, which was labeled the Red Decade, where you really see the influx of ideological communists into American letters and journalism. And think how long that ago that is. I mean, wow. McCarthy is 70 years ago. Now we're looking at 1930 being 90 years ago. So we've been functioning very, very kind of in a wounded way for a long time. And I just find it interesting, though, that the powers that be, and by that I just mean people with access to platforms and funding, like the producers at PBS, and of course that's public funding, a lot of it, yeah. Corporate funding too, they see it necessary to keep this really demonic kind of mythology alive, I think, to better control us. And in terms of how we approach our history and how we approach who we are and who we want to be. So it's very dangerous stuff. And people can say, oh, well, it's history. It's from the 1950s. Why do I care? It actually is day and date, present time relevant. And you find that every time you see these endlessly recycled references to how awful McCarthy was that just pass off the lift of every pundit, every teacher, everybody, right here in real time. So it's a very important subject, and getting it right requires just a little time. You know, you can really get the subjects. I'm going to try to continue posting and writing these debunkings because they are important, but it's not that hard to do once you master a little history here, and it's kind of fun in a way, but it's also, I think, there's something morally depraved about constantly lying about a man in this way and roasting him as sort of this weird ritual. And I think at this point, there's something very ghoulish about what we're doing. And I really hope someday to be able to, you know, look back and say, oh, we cracked it. We got rid of this terrible blot on our minds and on our honor.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Isn't it true that the lies about Joseph McCarthy can be considered a red thread?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's really the reddest thread of all, because, of course, what McCarthy was about, and this was really, it seems, sometimes when you talk to younger generations, they say, well, what's the big deal about this? He literally was trying to expose communists, people under, now, this is not just some sort of, you know, I want everyone to be happy kind of communist nonsense. This is seriously hardened agitators or assets or agents who are literally under discipline of a secret party that was literally controlled from Moscow. Now, this was Stalin's Moscow in the 1950s.
Wow.
This was at the time where we had just seen the theft of the atomic bomb secrets by communists. We had seen the invasion of South Korea by communists. We had just seen Alger Hiss exposed as a communist agent doing all kinds of damage to the post-war world from his influence at the State Department. We had just seen the fall of China, nationalist American ally China fall to Chairman Mao and begin that you know incredible killing spree of tens of millions of people. As a result, we were just seeing these things coming at us in the headlines when Joseph McCarthy came out as a communist fighter, as somebody who wanted to use his position in the U.S. Senate to hold hearings to find out what was going on. And his specific interest was the U.S. government. So this was not, for example, the culture or religion or Hollywood, which was looked at in a more macro way by the House on American Activities Committee. He was looking specifically at infiltration by hidden covert subversives who were literally taking orders from Moscow inside the U.S. government on the taxpayer dollar, trying to overthrow the country. What's wrong with that, right? But this became, so yes, when you say, was that the original red thread? Yes, because this posed the biggest threat to the hidden red thread, the hidden communists inside the government, trying to overturn us, trying to completely change us from within, trying to subvert the Constitution, etc., which they've been very successful at doing. And he really was this tenacious, courageous figure who had the confidence of, you know, sort of this America that does not really exist anymore, and maybe it never did, but he had this amazing, ebullient kind of confidence that by exposing these people, they could be removed, and many of them were at the time, and that they would not harm our country further if we could really unravel this and expose it. So he went into this with a tremendously optimistic air, I think. He fought hard. He learned a lot as he went along. There's this amazing meeting that took place between him and the original chairman of the House Un-American Activities Committee, Martin Dies, a Democrat from Texas. They have a meeting at a famous Washington restaurant long gone called Harvey's on Connecticut Avenue. And Joseph McCarthy asked Martin Dies, hey, you know, I'm thinking of investigating communists. Do you have any advice for me? And this was probably early 1950 or so. And Dies tries to tell him they will do everything they can to destroy you. They will lie, they will cheat, they will, you know, create fabricate hoaxes, etc., to take you down, because, of course, everything that happened to Joseph McCarthy had already been happening to Martin Dice going back to the late 1930s and moving forward in his period. Wow. And the other chairmen of the different committees, because people today, they don't understand. There were a number of very courageous Americans elected to federal office in Washington who were from both parties in both houses, who were really looking back at the Roosevelt-Truman administrations and saying, what happened? Why are there so many spies and agents and subversives inside our government? What can we do about it? And so they were all learning as they went, trying to unravel this, crack this very hardened conspiratorial organization, multiple organizations that had already really taken hold in meaningful ways. A lot of the levers of power in terms of influence and getting their buddies in and stopping good guys. I mean, there was a lot of stuff going on that was not visible to the naked eye. And so this became the purview of these men who, both parties, trying to protect our Constitution and learn what was going on and expose it, shine the light of day on it. And this is what McCarthy was all about. And really, he was the most successful. He was tremendously popular with the country. Really, you can say he was a populist hero in the mold of Donald Trump, frankly, and connected with the people who didn't want this going on. They wanted to protect the nation, and he was doing that. And this is why you see the communist networks. We had a very active party, all of their ancillary front organizations. They sort of bleed out into the media and political worlds, attacking him as public enemy number one to this communist effort to completely subvert our country. So this is sort of the backstory that, of course, a PBS will never tell you and certainly won't even have a historian or writer or anybody else who has that opinion on, even to balance the completely consistent line of leftist historians and anti-McCarthy spokesmodels that they have on in this documentary. So it's a very one-sided thing, of course, but basically it's there just to sort of tell the catechism one more time. Yeah. So that, you know, everybody's on the same page. McCarthy bad, you know, communists, free thinkers, fuzzy liberals, you know, good. And this is just, you know, appalling, because again, it's a human being. When he died in 1957. He was only 48 years old. He was a new father. He left behind a 5-month-old baby and a beautiful young wife. You know, it's a tragedy. And you know, aside from the personal aspect of this, we never get that sort of, who is this man as a person? Why was he doing this? What did he believe? It's all this relentless, really agitprop, and much of it did originate in the pages of the communist newspaper, The Daily Worker. Much of it did originate literally with Stalin himself. I've written about these sort of origins of McCarthyism. My fingers are making quotation marks as this effort that really came out of the sort of communist left networks as a means to destroy him by really subverting everything he did and lying about it and creating all these obstacles and, you know, traps and, you know, these hearings that were like show trials that were sort of like the impeachment today. There are parallels here. PBS won't tell you about those parallels. They'll just try to show them that Trump and McCarthy are both, well, actually the reviewers do that for them of the piece. I don't think they actually address President Trump in the documentary, but the parallels are supposed to be there, I do believe, to the left's portrayal of President Trump. Sure. In the same way as someone who lies and who takes down, you know, people, innocent people, et cetera, et cetera. And it's our history, it's who we are, and people really need to get involved and get the facts. And a great place to start is from M. Stanton Evans' book, Blacklisted by History, which is a revisionist biography of Joseph McCarthy. And I read it. I was so knocked out by it that I wrote my own revisionist history, which sort of builds on what Evans was able to do with Jess McCarthy. I sort of build it out from that point. And that book, of course, is American Betrayal. And it's essentially, once you understand that the left has seized our history and flipped it on its head, it's not just McCarthy that has to be turned right side up again. It's every other piece of it. And so my scope is, you know, a more ambitious one, and it's a longer or a different kind of scale. But it has to start with McCarthy, I think, in terms of understanding there's something wrong with what we've been taught. And in fact, it's everything that's been wrong with what we've been taught. And we really have to get back to that, to that original record and understand it.
Sure. What if a millennial would ask you, why is it important that we understand the truth about Senator McCarthy today?
Well, I think that the really important thing here is that the lesson that the left and, you know, the right, its battered spouse, teaches is this notion that never again should we have somebody like McCarthy with power to do all these terrible things. But what they're really saying is never again can you imagine or discuss or examine the concept of whether there really exists an enemy within who is working by stealth to destroy the country from within. In other words, we don't just have external enemies. And what McCarthy understood was, and I actually read recently an interview he gave with the AP back in the 1950s that really made this clear to me. He really understood that it was one thing to rail against communists abroad or even fight wars against communists abroad. One communist spy in Moscow, he said, really didn't matter, but a communist spy inside the State Department of the United States matters a lot. Well, what he was really talking about was what we think of today as the swamp, this establishment, this leftist establishment with this globalist orientation. This is really generations down the road what McCarthy was looking at in the 1950s. And so the importance of this is that we have to be on guard against these, quote, un-American ideas. Yes, anti-constitutional ideas are un-American. People who are loyal to other powers are un-American. He understood that there was an enemy within. Our Constitution, the oath to the Constitution, is to protect it from enemies foreign and domestic. Well, after McCarthy was destroyed and completely wronged in history, we no longer even dare to think that there could be a domestic enemy, that there could be embeds who are actually trying to destroy us. And I think this is why it's so vital to understand that so much of what he did was so valuable to safeguarding our country. And he was interrupted right in the middle of it. He was stopped. He was halted. He was destroyed. And he died shortly a few years later, at this very young age. So this is why it's important to a millennial, because we are still undefended more than ever. And right now we're mentally off guard. You can't survive if you aren't on guard. And that, I think, is the ultimate lesson that they teach us, not to be on guard against the enemy within. It still exists. It's still trying to take us down, and it's very successful.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, and I'll jump over here for a second to Soleimani. He's Tehran's former top terror chief, and he had the blood, of course, as I mentioned, of at least 1,000 servicemen on his hands, going all the way back to the bombing of the Marine barracks in Beirut, Lebanon. The president eliminated this monster. Now, shouldn't every American be giving him accolades, since he was the only president since Carter that had the chutzpah to take him out? And of course, yes, I am including Reagan in that, since he never responded to the Beirut bombing, which displayed weakness.
Well, it's a complicated question, because my concern here is the danger to President Trump that this action actually may lead to. And I think that the argument in the administration has always been against Trump's efforts to disengage with the Middle East, to take our armies out of Iraq and Afghanistan. And so this, to me, becomes, I'm out of step again, you know, from my colleagues, and in this case, even my president here, but I am concerned that the fallout ratchets up tensions and violence and gives cause to further violence from Iran and other Islamic jihadis groups and countries against us, and specifically against the president. This is unprecedented for a president to essentially brag about having taken out or destroyed, killed, assassinated, all the words, somebody inside a command structure of a country, however heinous. And so I am still kind of unnerved by it. Mm-hmm. I don't agree with the left, you know, on the matter. However, I'm not sure that we've gamed this out sufficiently in terms of, did we really need to do this particular action? And I would very much be interested in who was presenting it to the president. I mean, this again, we have to remember the Pentagon establishment, the intelligence establishment, they don't like him. So I'm wondering about the advice here. I'm wondering about the counsel. I'm wondering about the fallout. I see reports of troops heading back into Middle East. I don't want to see that. I hope that we can turn that around. I hope that, you know, I just read that Mar-a-Lago now has 4 new checkpoints for presidential safety. I mean, who advises a president to do something that increases the risk against him? So there are a lot of things here I think we need to sort of watch and see as they develop and certainly hope for the best. Yes, you know, Soleimani was a tremendous force against our forces in theater and elsewhere in the world and against other people as well. However, I don't know that defending that rotten embassy in Baghdad, should have led to this particular action. I don't want an embassy in Baghdad. I don't want a presence in Baghdad.
Right.
Neither does Donald Trump. So, you know, how did we get here and how do we really get out of here is really where I'm looking at it for. It's a complicated story, but I don't think it's just a story about avenging American battle deaths. I also, you know, you got to look back. We had the whole Bush administration, Obama administration actually ended our presence there. But yeah, the whole Bush administration and General Petraeus's war there, where they knew what the Iranians were doing. They knew that where those factories were that were making these more sophisticated explosives that killed all these Americans in Iraq, did nothing.
Right.
I mean, it was a conundrum at the time. It was a frustration at the time that we would be sending men into battle, knowing full well that across a border, these kinds of weapons were being shipped in with absolutely no treatment, recourse, nothing. And indeed, General Petraeus recently, who has supported this action, I personally think he's auditioning for a job myself. But he knew about this all along. And you know, we've heard more about how they knew the importance of Soleimani all along. And yet we were fighting a war and exposing our men to this without doing anything about it. And, you know, in terms of moral questions, there are a lot of them out there. Donald Trump inherited big messes, but my hope and I think his agenda was to sort of extricate. So I worry here with this kind of action that becomes harder to do. And I wonder about the people who advised him or certainly supported him on this decision and what their motives are as well. So there's a lot to unpack there, and we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, he has a great perspective there, too. Where can the listeners follow and support your brilliant work and purchase your books, including The Red Thread?
Oh, well, thank you. I've got my website, dianawest.net, which has all of my work, and I've been writing more and more for the Epoch Times as well, which carries a bunch of my columns, and Amazon carries the books, but everything is really organized on the website, so dianawest.net is the best spot to go.
Excellent. And of course, as always, I will have those links in my after show, which is now on the live show page. Just go to audreyrusso.com, click on the on air button, and right under the show description, you'll find the links and information you need to follow Diana's work and purchase it as well. Thank you so much, Diana, for sharing your brilliant assessments with us. We look forward to your return to the show. Until then, may God bless you, your work, and may God save America. Bye for now.
Bye for now, Audrey. Thank you so much.